Hello and hi, welcome to another Slice of Sci-Fi. I'm Summer Brooks, and my guest today is writer, director, producer Teddy Cecil, whose, I guess, first project of his own that he's done from beginning to end is a short film called Helio, which debuted earlier this year at San Diego Comic-Con and actually won Best Sci-Fi Film in their Indie Film Festival. So congratulations, Teddy, and welcome.
Oh, thanks so much, Summer. I really appreciate you having me on.
So give our listeners a little quick synopsis on what Helio is.
Yeah. It's a short film that takes place in a dystopian future where people live underground. And one person kind of finds a way to escape his world, and it starts this uprising. And that's basically the short film.
Now, this, like I said, this film won at San Diego Comic-Con. What led to you saying, I'm going to write a story, then I'm going to direct it and produce it? Here we go.
Well, I've always wanted to be a filmmaker, so I think it was more a matter of, what project would end up being the first one. So I always wanted to write and direct. And as for why it ended up being this project, that's a good question. I have lots of stories, but I felt like this one was particularly challenging and would give me a chance to learn a lot in terms of, production, because it has a lot of VFX and a lot of action. It also is a very visual kind of story. It was an exciting kind of topic for me, and that was what started it all.
Does the dystopian sci-fi appeal to you as a medium in which to tell a story?
Yeah, I think it does. I mean, I'm really into a lot of different genres, but as far as science fiction goes, I find it to be particularly fascinating. And really, because it's almost not even a genre in a sense, right? Because you think about genre, you think about comedy or drama or action, and all of those things can be science fiction, because it kind of more has to do with setting than actual plot. But if you know what I mean, because, again, that's a science fiction book, could be a comedy or an action or anything like that.
Well, I always enjoy finding new sci-fi indie features, because it seems, just because of it's easier to get them made, it seems like there's more and more and more horror. And I'm a horror fan, but I like my sci-fi too, and indie sci-fi seems to be few and far between these days. So every time I come across something different, I'm very appreciative. So thank you for that.
Oh, thank you. But yeah, I know exactly what you mean. It is kind of, it might be the toughest genre for independent filmmakers, just because it's kind of the, has a lot of ties with the visual spectacle. Often there's a lot of effects. You kind of expect certain things when you go to see a sci-fi that tend to, require more money and resources. It doesn't have to be the case. It's just generally the case, which is why, like you were saying, horror film, most of them take place, in a house with one kind of hero and one villain, basically. Basically, and most of them that you see now, if you go to festivals and stuff, it's a lot easier to kind of express yourself as a director by setting up, simple thing where, somebody's, you just have like two people in a house and you can make a really good horror film that way. It's a lot harder to do that with, independent sci-fi, like you're saying.
Now, this film runs just under 20 minutes, and after it was available for purchase on Vimeo for a while, right?
Just for a little bit. It was kind of how we premiered it out there. Now it's up online at Screen Anarchy premiered it. And soon we're even going to be up on CG Bros, also on YouTube, for everyone to see. And we're pretty excited about that. So it's, you know, if you get a chance, go check it out.
It actually is on YouTube live for people to see right now.
Yeah.
Now, what for you was the biggest challenge in making this? Because I noticed a few things in the film that I want to ask you about after you answer that question.
Okay. I think actually, from a technical standpoint, there's, you know, over 100 VFX shots in the film, and that was really what most of the time and effort and resources kind of went into, was getting those shots at a point where we felt, you know, we were kind of making a good visual. And it was really tough to do that with an independent budget and independent crew, which is why it kind of ultimately took us over 2 years to make this short film, because there's so much VFX. So as far as actual kind of production elements goes, that was the toughest part, I think, just because of what it took to get us there. But as far as, you know, the story and everything goes, it was really tricky kind of getting, because basically it's a 20-minute film with almost no dialogue. And it was tough getting it to the point where, you know, we felt confident with that there was a real story here and enough kind of entertainment to keep you occupied for the whole 20 minutes.
And I was going to ask, was that a deliberate choice? Because other than a few exclamations by people who are peripherally involved, the main character doesn't have any dialogue at all. Everything that happens builds up because of the reactions or the emotions of everyone he runs around, because he's trying to escape from the enforcers who are chasing him. And once all of the other citizens see what he's doing, they start pulling for him to get to the ladder, to get above ground. And I'm still trying to figure out how it did it, but that actually made it more of an emotional kind of story, because you see everybody reacting to the main character, but the main character doesn't interact with anyone after the first scene. He's inspiring everybody else to action simply by refusing to quit or be caught.
Right. That's exactly right. And I feel like often dialogue can be kind of a crutch for storytelling. You know, and it's a lot easier in some ways to tell the audience or anybody how somebody's feeling just with words rather than showing it.
Mm-hmm.
So that was definitely a challenge. But I also feel like, you know, the viewer gets a better opportunity to kind of instill themselves in their own feelings in the protagonist role, where it's kind of more of a face and not so much a voice. So it feels a lot more relatable when the character is kind of not talking like that. But it definitely was a challenge. And he definitely was, like you said, reacting to his environment and his world. And that's kind of what kept it going, versus, you know, any kind of discussion about it with him. Because you're right, he in the 20 minutes, he's in, you know, pretty much every shot, but he has no dialogue.
Now, based on how it ended, and I'm not going to spoil it for everybody because they should go see it, Are there any plans to expand this to a miniseries that you put online or maybe a feature?
Yeah. So the plan is to, I do have a, I actually have a trilogy, you know, kind of put together that is loosely a reimagining, a science fiction reimagining of Dante's Divine Comedy. Where there's three kind of different worlds that a character ascends between. The first would be a version of the Inferno, and it's not actually the afterlife in our story or anything like that. It's just kind of, again, a way to reimagine the environment. So they take place in this, you know, dystopian future underworld after the planet's kind of been destroyed, and then the story builds from there. Yeah, I do have a plan for what to do if we get an opportunity to turn it into a bigger story. And that's a big part of, you know, why we made this film to begin with, actually, was because we do have a bigger story we want to tell. And we're taking it around town right now, kind of trying to get that ball going. So, you know, but that's kind of the name of the game.
So is that what you're currently working on, just shopping the rest of the story around, or is there something you're actually in production on?
That it's one of the things that we're putting a lot of time into, is trying to get a feature made. But we did just finish another short film. It's a comedy. I'm pretty excited about it, but we've got, you know, maybe we've got a few weeks left of sound design before we're moving on to coloring and then getting it out into the world. But it's totally different than Helio in a lot of ways. It definitely has kind of fantastical elements, but it is a comedy. So like we talked about, you know, genre can really shift, even though you can have kind of some of the same thematic elements. But yeah, you know, just moving on, trying to stay busy, make as many projects as we can. We have other feature ideas that we're developing and kind of also bringing around in addition to Helio. So, you know, just trying to make it happen.
Now, are all of these projects being produced by Shadow Council Productions? Is that yours?
Yeah, at the current time it is. But the goal is, you know, we're just developing it at this point. Once we actually really get into production with a big, if we got something with a big budget, we'd probably want to do a co-production.
Mm-hmm.
But so far everything's just kind of been us, and it's been going really great. We were able to do it all in-house, so we're pretty happy with what we're able to do as a team.
Cool. As a film-based creative, what part of the entire process do you find the most satisfying? Because you're, like you said right now, you're writing it, you're producing it, you're directing it. So all those aspects are those. You've got pre-production, you've got post-production, you've got VFX. What part of that process for any film that you are involved in gets you the most excited?
I think every part of the process has its perks, because, you know, obviously every part of it's just as significant in terms of the filmmaking process, but you're constantly seeing kind of the story come together and take shape, whether you're, you know, writing it or in production and kind of seeing how the performances are, editing and cutting it together, or even, you know, coloring it or bringing it to a movie theater and seeing people react. I find that each part of the process definitely has, you know, the appeal of filmmaking in it. But for me, I think it always comes down to story being the most important thing. So I do get really excited kind of coming up with the idea and figuring out how to put it together. But then also, ultimately, it is about, you know, seeing or showing it to people. So I think that's also very exciting getting to see how other people react to it and stuff. Hopefully they like it, but if they don't, that's still really cool that they, you know, checked it out and then you can have a discussion about it. So I'm just a fan of the whole process.
Now, as a storyteller, do you find yourself tweaking the story when you're directing it? Like, you see, oh, I didn't notice that when I written it. I got to change this.
Yeah. I think it's good to be a little bit organic because you can always improve it at any point. And if you kind of, you know, keep your ear to the ground, you'll be able to pick up on changes that need to happen while you're doing it, especially, you know, once other people are involved, because then you're getting more opinions and hearing things that you might not have thought about, which always helps. But yeah, I'm kind of a real fan of over preparation to the point where everything's worked out ahead of time. But then in the moment, being able to, you know, basically improvise or go in a totally different direction or, you know, just keep it organic so that I am constantly kind of building the story with, you know, what we're able to do on set and things like that. At the same time, I feel like I go into every situation needing to know what I'm doing exactly and then possibly changing it as I go.
So, Since the film was rather dark from a lighting perspective, how challenging was that? Because there are some scenes where it's really, really dark, but you can tell that there's a lot of detail on some of the costumes.
Yeah.
And you can't, I'm like, I want to see that. What happened?
So why did we choose to make it very dark?
Yeah, I mean, I understand you're underground, and but there are some scenes where when the light comes close, you can see some really interesting detail on some of the costumes, especially on some of the enforcers. I'm like, what's going on there? Is there something more behind that?
Right. I got together with all the different department heads and, like, you know, wardrobe and production design, and we'd go over kind of the whole story and the world, and what we would do is build, you know, a real logic behind everything so that if you did happen to get a glimpse of, you know, something in the world like how food is made or blah, 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 it would fit together with everything else. And we didn't always, you know, so we did shoot some things that aren't in there, and we, you know, things like that, so it's constantly evolving, but the point was to have it be as logical if somebody decided to go in and look at all those details. So you know, we did really try and build a world, but not spoon-feed it to you,
mm-hmm.
Which is why there are those moments, I feel, where, you know, you can see this, like, hints at the detail, if that makes sense.
Yeah, just because noticing the details in some of the underground civilization took a different meaning for me at the end after
right.
Our hero climbs the ladder. And
right.
I went, whoa, there's a lot more to this than I thought. And then it ends. And I'm like, no, that's not fair. I want more.
Right. Hopefully we'll be able to make more.
Now, have you thought about expanding some of the story into, like, graphic novels or some other online media if it takes,
you know,
too long to get the story, to get the movies made?
Yeah, you know, actually, I have, even if we did get the movies made, I still have stuff that, you know, I'd love to be able to extend it into the graphic novel realm and all these things. And I do have ideas even for kind of a TV show that could act as a prequel for this, so we get to see how this world came to be. But yeah, I think it kind of, Helio kind of lends itself to that because it's a world building thing. So what's fun is you can kind of keep going with it. But yeah, I really do want to try and tackle graphic novels and things like that, especially if you know, there's a little bit of a delay with getting their story onto the screen.
Awesome. Well, Teddy, thank you for your time today.
Oh, thank you so much.
Tell our listeners where they can find you and Helio online.
Yeah, sure. So our company is called Shadow Council Productions, and you can just Google Shadow Council or go to our website, which is shadowcouncil.com, and we're on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram and all the social media. So am I as an individual. My name is Teddy Cecil, so, and you can check me out. Also, the film Helio, it's up on YouTube, so just go ahead and Google it or YouTube it and let us know what you think.
Yeah, and we'll definitely have the link to the YouTube posting so you can watch the film for yourself. Again, the movie, the short film rather, is Helio. Hopefully we'll get a movie out of it. The winner of the sci-fi portion of San Diego Comic-Con's film festival. Thank you so much, Teddy.
Thank you so much, Summer. Absolute pleasure chatting with you.
And we'll be back with more Slice of Sci-Fi right after this.
Slice of Sci-Fi.
Hey, you. Stop hiding behind that sofa. Come out from back there. Your sofa wants to talk to you. Wants to play footsie with your mind. Listen to it. Relax. Let it in. Starship Sofa. The first podcast ever to win a Hugo Award. With weekly stories from the world's best authors. Michael Moorcock, Peter Watts, Joe Haldeman, Peter F. Hamilton, and many, many, many more. With news and reviews and interviews. Bradbury, Pole, Wolfe, and Mieville, the sofas chewed the fat with them all. Facts and fictions, articles and particles. Oh, why aren't you listening? StarshipSofa.com. Your best science fictional fix this side of the coffee table.
Well, that's going to do it for this episode and perhaps for this year. We've got the holiday season coming up. Everybody's busy doing so many other things. There's no time for interviews. There's no time for editing. There's no time for as much sci-fi fun as I would like to have. So I'm going to take some downtime, recharge, reload, get into my typical Christmas Day rituals of reading the Matador trilogy, all three books, and watching the Lord of the Rings trilogy, all three movies, the director's cut. Yeah, that's a long day. I don't know, maybe it's time for me to find a new Christmas Day binge watch. Daredevil, Luke Cage, Jessica Jones. Something to think about. And for those of you who still have not had enough of the Marvel Cinematic Universe this year, go check out Marvel's YouTube channel. They have a playlist for Marvel Heroes fireside videos. You know, those, how you can turn to the TV channel and you can watch the fireplace on TV, and sometimes it'll have music, or sometimes it's just the fireplace. There's a new YouTube one that I had seen that had the fireplace with a cat and a dog sitting beside it, which was entertaining just because of the cat. And the dog was just kind of happy to be there. The cat was like, really? You're going to make me sit here? But now Marvel has joined the fray. We have a fireside video in Captain America's apartment in Brooklyn, in Tony Stark's apartment in Manhattan, Ms. Marvel's apartment in New Jersey, Thor's home in Asgard, and I think one of the favorites is the digital fireside on the spaceship from Guardians of the Galaxy, which, if you look very, very closely, has a very, very tiny dancing baby Groot beside it. So that made my week. And yes, the videos are in 4K, so you can play that high def on your 55-inch TV or larger and just enjoy the holiday mood. But like I said, that'll do it for this year. Yeah, and we'll be back in January with some more content, a few more exclusive special interviews, a few more ideas for expanding beyond what we're already doing for Writers After Dark and Pop Culture Geeks. Not sure when that's going to launch or how all the pieces are going to fit together, but I feel kind of invigorated and excited by the prospect. So we'll head down that road and see where it takes us. But like I said, that'll do it for 2016. I am ready for 2016 to end. Too many of my heroes died this year. David Bowie and Prince being top of the list, with Muhammad Ali right close behind, and quite a few others. If you haven't watched it, John Oliver's Last Week Tonight show on HBO is entertaining. I don't have HBO, but I watch the clips that they put on YouTube. Find the clip for his last show and watch the end of it. It's got a very, very heartfelt, special message for the year 2016. That was entirely, entirely inspired, hilarious, and wrong in all of the best ways possible. My sentiments exactly, put in language I cannot repeat here in this venue, but it matches my sentiments. Go find it. If you're curious and you can't find it, ask me on Twitter or send me an email and I'll post a link to it. I'll link to it in Twitter. And we can all ring out the new year with heartfelt admonitions that hopefully we've already hit bottom, so there's no place else left to go but up. So if you have any other questions or comments or insights or suggestions, feel free to call those in. The number is 602-635-6976, or send an email, summer@sliceofscifi.com. I will get to them. I'll actually probably have more time to get to them quicker this next couple of weeks than I have before. You can listen to Slice of Sci-Fi on iTunes, on Stitcher, on TuneIn, and of course on Krypton Radio. If you're listening, leave us a review on iTunes or on Stitcher. Let people know that we are still around. For some reason, people think we're gone. Like, no, I rebooted the show 2 years ago. We're still going strong. Check us out on Twitter, @SliceOfSciFi. Check us out on Google Plus and on YouTube. We're Slice of Sci-Fi over there. And of course, the websites are SliceOfSciFi.com, PopCultureGeeks.com, and WritersAfterDark.com. Thank you all for your donations and your pledges through Patreon. They do help things keep going around here. If you want to help support this show and all the projects associated in orbit around Slice of Sci-Fi, you may say, that page is patreon.com/sliceofscifi. And as always, my thanks go out to the geek rock band Sci-Fried for their musical contributions to the show. If you want to check out more original music by them, the website is sci-fried.com. Thanks so much. Everybody have a safe and happy holiday season. and we will be back with more Slice of Sci-Fi in 2017. Take care.